That's going. So, Richard, congratulations, 300Ks.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to have to pretend that we didn't have a chat yesterday when I got very excited when I was cycling to work and I was asking you all the questions that I wanted to ask today. So I'm going to pretend that I didn't ask them and I'm going to ask them for the first time. Is that okay?
That's fine, yes.
So the first question, I think. Well, yeah, I was really interested in Elan Valley because I've heard of it, but you said you'd never flown there before. What made you think of Elan Valley?
It had been on my radar for quite a while. I think Steve Parsons might have mentioned it to me a year or two ago as a possible 300 site. Because, you know, when you start to try and draw a 300-kilometre straight line in Britain, dodging the airspace and things, there's not many places you can do that.
Yeah.
But obviously South sort of Wales, Mid Wales was an area where I was sort of looking for a southwest site. I ended up talking to Steve. He said about the Elan Valley, and I actually went there about a year ago just to have a look. It was totally unflyable, but I was in South Wales. I'd got nothing better to do, so I drove over that way and just checked the site out last year sometime. And then anyway, yeah, the forecast came along this year, so I made my way down.
And it wasn't like an epic forecast. And we were looking at it and it didn't, I mean, yeah, it was rasp red and we've had a really good run, haven't we, the last two and a half weeks. It's been amazing. But it didn't look that windy. I mean, it was sort of southwest 10 miles an hour. Is that what you saw? Or?
No, it was not the perfect day by any means. I needed ideally more wind and a slightly better rasp because it was sort of three star, four star with a bit of five star. Really you want a light wind, don't you, in the morning, picking up to a good gale in the afternoon and five star all the way. So, it was an off chance that it might work. I've got nothing better to do, so give it a shot.
Yeah, cool. And so to back to Elan Valley, what's it like? I mean, it's kind of in the middle of Wales, isn't it? It's a long drive for anyone, I guess. So what's the site like?
Huge open sort of moorland out in front, a reservoir that's quite low at the moment. Maybe that helped a little bit. I was saying that though, the thermal probably didn't come from the reservoirs. The getaway climb was almost certainly from the valley to the right and the moorland sort of heather. Very open sort of country. You know, you can't see a building or anything from up there. And I think it's about 1,500 above sea, so it's not a little sort of Sharpenhoe type site. It's a big hill. Well, yeah. It's not a huge hill, but it's high up in the mountains.
Okay.
Top to bottom, maybe 600-700 feet, something like that.
Okay. And you said you got away at about 11 o'clock, is that right?
I think, yeah, looking at my trace, yes, it was 11 o'clock, although I'd been in the air for probably half an hour before that and ended up having to slope land because I was in danger of sinking out. Maybe that was a sign of something good, you know, good thermal out front. I don't know. Anyway, I slapped it on the side, turned my instrument off, turned it back on again. And the lad I was flying with, he carried on scratching on a little hill over to the west. And as he started to get up again, that's when I sort of relaunched and flew straight over, found the core and was away.
Yeah.
So it looks like it was an instant takeoff and getaway, but actually I'd been in the air for a good half an hour beforehand.
And we'd had very good air the day before. I mean, it's like 4 or 5 metre climbs. Was it similar for you on the Sunday?
The climb away from the Elan Valley actually was a stonker. I was doing, I talk feet per minute. So I touched 700 feet a minute in that climb. And it's funny, actually, talking to Piers, the other lad that was flying there that day, he said it's normal to dribble away across the moors, you know, not very high at all, until you get over the deep valley behind, and then it pings. Yeah. Anyway, the climb I had out, I was, it was a rocket. It was brilliant, 700 foot a minute.
And what was base? What was base at that early on?
It was only something like 3.8. It wasn't that high.
It's not bad for 11 o'clock, though, is it?
If it's no, I suppose 11. Not. No.
And so yeah, not much drift to start with. Was it sort of clearly drifting, but not, you know,
No, not a huge drift. I mean, I climbed very steeply. Well, obviously in a 700 foot a minute thermal, you're going up pretty quick. I think I was only seeing about 60 kilometres an hour normally on sort of speed bar downwind. That's about 30% speed bar. I've looked at my trace and I did have a point where I did 75, but I'm almost certainly flat out on the speed bar at that point, trying to stay out the cloud.
Right. And so I've got to slow myself down because I want to talk about the 7,000 foot cloud base that your track shows later on. But I'm not going to ask you about that. I'm not going to ask you about that. I'm going to ask you about the route, because we did a 200K day the day before, and we were on the train back and we're all knackered. Oh, we're going to get out tomorrow. No, I can't be bothered. I think I spoke to Graham and he'd had slightly better air north of us. But then I sort of got home and I looked at the map and I thought, hang on a minute, because Birmingham's always gets in the way. If you're flying from Merth in the southwest, you bump into Birmingham. I thought, actually, if you can get north of Birmingham, there's a bit of a sneaky route through the peaks. And then you went and did it. So tell me about that route, because I'd only just clocked it the day before, and obviously it's been on your radar. It took you basically over your home, didn't it? Through a gap between Birmingham and, north of Birmingham?
North of Birmingham, south of Manchester.
Yeah.
And then the gap between Leeds, Bradford and Doncaster, is home turf for me.
So the first bit, how does that go? Is it quite a narrow gap you have to squeeze through?
No, it's huge. Okay. A very big wide space of 5,000, flight level 5.5.
Right.
That's quite a big gap, really.
So what sort of time are you getting into the peaks? I guess that must have been after, 120 Ks or so, is that right?
Good question. Don't know. I'd have to look at that.
Get the map out later.
It must be something like that. Yes. I must have been getting under the 5.5 around sort of Stoke-on-Trent sort of way. Something like 120-ish. Something.
And what time was that? Do you remember? Is it sort of 2 o'clock ish or?
Sorry, I don't.
Come on, Richard. You've got to be home. This is a serious interview. Come on.
Serious, but like,
I'll get the track log up.
That's important. The important thing is where I'm going for the next climb, and don't stick myself into a dead end. You know, where I'm stuffed with. I'm thinking on the radio. Piers climbed away as well in the same climb, and we flew together a bit for the first 60-70k, I'm not quite sure. Anyway, Shrewsbury was approaching, still probably 20 kilometres away.
Yeah.
But I said to him on the radio, I think we need to start thinking about going east a little bit to avoid the chances that the two maxes are at near Shrewsbury could cause us a problem. And it also lined us up for going into Derbyshire a bit better, because I didn't want to end up in the 4.5 next to Manchester. I wanted to stay in the 5.5. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, even though I'm sort of 80k away from this flight level 5.5, I'm thinking about that, you know, 80k away. That line is not quite right here. We need to go a little bit east.
I can see you push more east south of Shrewsbury, because your climbs are taking you slightly north. And you ended up, you crossed the M6 south of Stoke about 3.5 hours into the flight, so about 2:30. So that was about the time you're starting to get towards the peaks. And your track then takes you kind of more north, just slightly, but a little bit more north towards, you went pretty much straight over Sheffield, didn't you?
Yeah, very much so, yes. Yeah. Which, like I say, is all home turf, so flying under the 5.5, then it changes to flight level 6.5 for a short period. Then you're
Hang
free.
On a sec, I'm going to stop. I've just looked. 3.5 hours into the flight, 3 hours, 20 minutes of flight, you'd only done 115 Ks. So that's quite important to note, isn't it? Like, you took off at 11, by about 20 past 2, you'd done 115 Ks, and you still went on to do 300.
Yeah. I wasn't convinced that 300 was on at all. But I really thought, I can do 200 today for sure, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So you did 200 after 5 hours, 48 minutes. I'm just interested in this because I always sort of think, well, look, by 7 o'clock the day's dead and you flew on till 8. And how important those last two and a half hours are.
It's well, quite often you are on the ground at 6 o'clock, aren't you? Yeah. It's quite normal, that. But, yeah. You know, luckily it kept on working for me.
So basically, yeah, it's sort of about coming up to 5 o'clock. You've done 200 k's, and you did your last 100 k's after 5 o'clock. That's staggering.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, but you know, there's stories, isn't there, of guys leaving the hill at very late and still doing 100 k sort of thing. I'm thinking right back, sort of 30 years. There was hang glider pilots leaving Derbyshire at silly, you know, late evening flights and getting to Skegness, having left at 4 o'clock in the afternoon or something.
Yeah, so. And the day's often better, isn't it? I mean, we're sort of going a bit slightly off, but you know, after 3 o'clock, the day gets really good, doesn't it? And it can often get easier. Did you find that on this day?
The thermals became a lot easier to work later on. Earlier on, they were really quite bitty. And I'd had a look at the boundary shear ratio thing that's RASP. Does and that had shown a real variation through the day. Some bits were going to be good and some bits were going to be quite awkward, and that's how it was really.
So your big heights were sort of Peak District onwards. Did you notice the base step up maybe as the air got drier?
Yes, oh certainly, yeah. As I went under the 5.5, I was having to sort of leave climbs and hoof it to make sure I didn't get sucked up, because the clouds were getting quite a size, just physically not dangerous in any way, the size of the clouds, but you know, they were big and they were working, and thermals were several kilometres across at times. So I needed to be careful.
I just don't get this air mass, because it's been quite humid at night and southwesterly. I don't know, do you get it? Why has it been so good?
No, I don't. No, I suppose we just haven't had much significant rain, have we, for a time? The ground is—it's like flying in Spain or somewhere like that. Where the ground's so, super dry.
So when did you first hit 7 grand?
It was only once, I think, and that was just after leaving the flight level 4.5 at the M62.
Right.
It was getting on quite late by then. You know, I could see the sun was getting low, shadows were getting longer, but the climb was good. Yeah, cloud base was high.
And your if you look at your barograph, whatnot, height, doodah, you never get low, do you? I mean, you get low once before you then get to your 7 grand point, but you don't really get low. Is that right?
Not stupidly low. It's funny though, when you've got a cloud base of 6,500, you get down to 3 and you go, blimey, I feel a bit low here. And then you go and look at your other 3 grand, come on. Some days you don't get much better than that.
But I guess the thermals are that more spaced as well, so you do feel more exposed, don't you? Because, you know, when it's a low base, the climbs are all closer together and you've got more chance of stumbling into one. But when you've got a really high base, they're quite spread out.
Exactly, And that was my worry going through the flight level 4.5 bit, that I couldn't top the climbs out, therefore I might not be able to make the glide.
But you only had 5 climbs from quarter past... I sound like a right geek here, but all I've got to work on is your numbers. Quarter past 5 till 7:30, you only had 5 climbs.
I looked at that this morning as well and clocked that after exiting the flight level 4.5, essentially, from there to Scarborough, was 5 climbs.
That's nuts.
Was the
air that much better, that side of the peaks?
It changed. The thermals were huge. The clouds were huge. I would glide underneath the clouds quite often for a long time in sort of like zeros, plus ones, in very, very good air, just to make the most of it before then diving across, you know, a huge big blue gap to find the next climb. I think I still don't appreciate just how well a Zeno will glide now.
Yeah.
I'm sort of like looking at the next cloud downwind, thinking that's too far away. But then you get there, and hey ho, it works.
Yeah, yeah, they do. They do save you height, don't they? The other bit I'm interested in is the sort of the last 50 to 75Ks when clearly you thought, this might be on. Yeah. I mean, I only have one experience of this when I did the 260 from Charbonneau. I mean, you know, at 250, I was like, oh my God, I just became so excited that it pretty much ruined my flight, you know. It's just...
Right.
So how do you get that? Do you become like a sort of a nine-year-old boy, or do you manage to sort of keep your emotions in check, and how do you do it?
I think I'm probably quite good at, not getting too flustered-y, excited-y, well, it'll be what it'll be, and we'll try my best, and if it comes together, it does, and if it doesn't, hey-ho. I suppose, because I've had the record a few times now, the first time I did the record, I had no idea that I'd got the record. And actually, most of the time, well, those early days, we didn't have GPSs.
Yeah, exactly, I was going to say.
You landed, you put your pin on the map, and then you went home and you did the maths, and you went, oh, fucking hell.
You got your signature from Mrs. Dibbins, you know, in the cottage, you saw you land.
Yeah,
so you knew it was close, and you managed to keep a cool head.
At the end there, I'm on a fairly long glide. The sky looks not too active. The last climb that sort of got me to 300, I'd been looking at this area of pig farms on the ground, thinking nice and dark and what have you. It's in the sunshine, that's all right. And as I neared it, there's this huge flock of seagulls took off, and they're all whirling around quite low below me. But then I spotted two or three at my sort of altitude, thermaling as well, and bingo, you know, there it was. And even at that time, I think I averaged maybe up to 400 foot a minute in that climb. Wow. So, that's when I sort of thought, right, not just the British record, but the 300 could be here as well.
And had the wind picked up then?
Not really, no. No, I've still best glide was only about 60 kilometres an hour ground. In fact, I think it was dropping into the 50s by then.
Looking at the stats, it doesn't look windy. So you just got, you know, so do you remember what height you were at when you topped out on that glide, on that climb, the last climb?
I don't know, but it wasn't as high.
Yeah. It looks like it's about 5'2", actually.
I didn't get to the 6. And I didn't know whether to carry on searching to see if I'd lost it or just go for it. There was a cloud in the right direction that I thought, that's probably going to give me a very good glide underneath it. And it did for quite a long way. I was sort of zeroing, one down, two down, before I sort of like went out into the blue, as it were, for the final glide. And slowly I'm looking at the numbers on the instrument that say, I don't know, required to goal 10 to 1 or something. And it was sort of like, I was getting 23 to 1 under the cloud. So the numbers were just going the right way all the time.
Yeah. And so you glided in, nice long glide. You did about 20 Ks on your final glide.
Right.
And you crossed the goal. And how was that for you, Mr. Carter?
Well, it was super smooth. I just took everything in. I was looking around thinking, right, what can I do? Because if there's a sea breeze or something that I'm going to stumble into, this could really stuff it. So I did everything I could to just max that glide out. Tucking my hands in, sucking my cheeks in.
Did you have your little wind vein string, haven't you, on your pod by your toes? Are you watching that?
Well, I think that's pulled off, actually, now. Yeah, it's gone. I don't have that little tassel anymore.
Ripped off by one of the thermals.
Yeah.
Ah, fantastic. Well, good effort. You did the 100. I remember in Merthyr in 94, that was my first day of my first comp. And I remember you doing the 100 then. And then... Mm-hmm.
I remember that one, with the gaggle. Yeah. Robbie will be in there, and quite a lot of the names at the time. John Pendry and John Sylvester, Pat Holmes.
Then he did the 200 up to 250, and now you've done 300. Are you going to just... Can you give us the rest of us a chance now, Richard? I mean, there's nothing left, but fuck's sake.
You could have come and joined me, you know. It's not a private site.
I didn't get a phone call, Richard.
I'm sorry. Well, look what happened last time I rattled your cage. We all went to Sharpeno and I made an arse of it. Yes, I flew like a right plonker that day.
Oh, dear, right. That was a tricky day, wasn't it? Yeah.
I was struggling. Like, I lost that crap, you know, the gaggle, didn't I, that day? Then I caught you back up again. And then stupidly, I stopped for another climb on my own, rather than carry on gliding with you lot. And of course, working those conditions on your own was so difficult. With the gaggle, sort of finding the cause was so much easier. Anyway, hey-ho.
There's something quite nice about flying on your own as well, because, I mean, you know, it could just be that you've got no one to show you up for your mistakes, but it does your confidence quite a lot of good, not knowing how you have or haven't messed up. You're just doing your best in what you've got. Do you know what I mean? So do you think that works in your favour sometimes when you're flying on your own?
Certainly, yes. Certainly, yeah. Definitely. Because that Sharpeno day, I was measuring myself against you boys and I was, kicking myself. Why did I lose? Why did I drop off the tail of your gaggle, you know, when I was back with you?
I love it when Mark and Luke can't get out because finally I don't have to be like...
Oh, yeah, when they glide off.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. It does.
And
love them as I do. Well done. Anything else that I haven't asked you that I should? Probably are. I have no idea. Your instruments. You tell me. Come on. Because obviously, you know, record-breaking... flight. You must have used top technology, right? You must have had a bank of screens of iPads and XC tracks.
I'll send you a photograph.
What did you use?
I've got a Flymaster something or other that's from 2011.
Pretty modern for you.
And I broke my Kobo earlier this year. Which I still haven't replaced. And so I was back to using an old Garmin 76, which must be 20 years. I don't know, is it 15 years? I don't know, it's ancient anyway.
It was one of the first ones, wasn't it? I mean, it's got the screen is the size of a matchbox.
Yeah,
they've got those buttons and they're easy to zoom in and out. And you fly with an air map as well?
Yes, I've got two paper air maps, folded for
North and South
today.
England, north and the south of the country. One go in each pocket on either side?
Sorry?
Does one go on each pocket on either side of the harness?
No, I've got like a Rambler's map case.
Oh, brilliant.
It's transparent and that's inside my harness and I can pull it out and have a look. So I've got quite a big sheet.
You get your reading specs on as you pull it out?
I have to wear bifocal sunglasses now, otherwise I can't read any of the instruments.
Fantastic. Yeah. And China graph pencil?
No, I haven't got
that. I haven't used an air map recently, but actually they're really good, aren't they? Because you've got the whole thing is on one bit of paper, and it's. Did you use it then when you were flying? Sort of comparing?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I checked up near Shrewsbury that there wasn't anything sort of there that I, because of course the air map on the old 76 is quite old.
Yeah.
But my air map is new.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's this year, so I could check and confirm. And again, the same when I got out of the 4.5 over the M62.
Yeah.
I looked at my 76 to say what was there, and I checked it again on my air map just to say, right, okay, is there anything here I need to avoid?
But
it was pretty clear from there all the way to Scarborough.
So, final glide, you weren't screaming with excitement like a school kid. You landed. Where did you land? Who was the first person you met? How did you feel? What happened next?
Landed in a little field all on my own with some cowpats. Nobody came to see me. I made a few phone calls. It's sort of packed up, walked to the road. Yeah, still nobody to talk to or anything. The first person I talked to was a taxi driver, actually. Yeah. I phoned for a taxi to get into. Yeah, the first real person I talked to, yeah, was that taxi driver.
Yeah. What did you make of it?
Sorry?
Did you tell him you'd broken the record?
Yeah, I did sort of explode. Whether it really sank in with him or not, I don't know. I got a phone call from, I think it might have been John Stevenson while I was in the taxi, so obviously that the driver listened to that and got the gist of what was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd phoned Lee Cooper earlier to see if he could find me a hotel in Scarborough, because I Googled the trains and I'd missed, you know, there was no chance of getting out of Scarborough that night.
Okay.
So it was a night in the Grand Hotel Scarborough seafront for me.
Nice. Brilliant. Brilliant. You must be chuffed. Because a lot of people have been chasing this for a long time.
I think it sort of sunk in this morning when I was sort of like mulling the flight through, you know, in bed. Like, yeah. That is quite a long way, that.
Yeah. And it wasn't an near miss. You got over, you know, you declared it as well.
I did, yeah. The declare in some ways was as much to give me a place to point to on the coast.
Yeah.
Because once you've got over the M65, you could sort of head more east towards Bridlington, but you wouldn't get the 300 then. You'd run out of land. So I knew I needed to go to where my arrow was pointing, or further north.
Right.
But anything further south was rather iffy.
Was the wind taking you more east then? Was the wind more southwest? Or?
Good question. It was reasonably well on. There was probably a little bit too much west in it, a tiny bit. I was perhaps crosswinding a tiny bit. But there was a more southerly wind right on the coast when I landed. It was very southerly there, but that was only, like I say, on the coast. There was a wee line of convergence, but I never connected with it and made anything of it. Yeah, in hindsight, perhaps I should have given me goal up, tried to find that convergence and flown up to Whitby, but anyway, I got the 300. That was my goal for the day.
I don't think you should really beat yourself up too much, Richard, for not finding the convergence.
You see, that's me, that I, even though I've had the records lots of times and things, I'm still thinking, if I did that would have been a bit better.
Yeah.
No, if I'd done that would have been better. And if I'd done that, I'd have got there quicker. So I could. Yeah. It's just me. It's what I do. I'm always, whatever I'm doing, whether it was fixing my motorbike, building this house, I'm always thinking, if I'd done that, that would be better. Anyway.
And I think another thing that plays in your favour is an underrated attribute is the planning and the thinking ahead and. You know, you've obviously, you're sort of semi-retired this year. You're not doing much work, are you? So you've had the time, but you've definitely put the effort into planning the route in advance and checking it all out. And you're quite methodical in that way, aren't you?
Yeah, I do spend a lot of time, looking and thinking and, working out where to go, what to do, looking at the RAS pictures and things, No, and I have, like you say, I've got a lot of time at the moment. Sort of semi-retired, as it were, so gives me plenty of time to get out.
Yeah, and you enjoying it as much as ever, or a bit less?
I mean, it's a great bunch of friends. I mean, I know yesterday's flight was on my own, but the flying community is brilliant. Things like the North South Cup, it's just great going and seeing lots of people.
No, it's good fun. And we're all very, very happy for you, you git.
Yes, I know that it was on the cards for a lot of sort of like the top sort of 20 guys in Britain were all wanting it.
Yeah, you've gone to a better person. You deserve it. And
I made that effort to go to take the gamble. It was a gamble going to the Elan Valley for the Sunday. There was a chance it might work, and luckily everything came together.
Yeah, I mean, it's not your first gamble. You went to Model Ridge, didn't you? And I think the forecast had gone a bit pear-shaped the day before that. But you made the effort, and you went up and did that, and you came on the Sharpen O Day. And you've put a lot of days in this year to try it out. Yeah. So,
Yes, yeah, you're right. Yes, yeah. I did go up to Model Ridge, give that a go, but yeah, it all fell apart. Yeah, there was what was it? Carl Woolbank was there, wasn't he? He set a goal of Bognor Regis or something on the south coast.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, just every yeah, it was nothing like the good day that we'd hoped for.
Yeah, yeah. Good effort.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you on the hill soon.
Yes. Yeah. See you sometime. All right.
Cool. Okay. Cheers, Richard.
Is that it, official?
What's that?
Is that it? Then are we, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to press stop now, but we